Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the 100th episode of the Calcio Land podcast. What an achievement. At the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit about what we learned on these first 100 episodes and give out some thank yous. But before we get to all that, before we name our winners and losers from the weekend in Serie A, before we preview the matches that are going to be played in Italy tomorrow and Wednesday to make up that weekend where we had to cancel games because of Astori's death, I am joined by our great co-host and producer, Alex Goldberg. And Alex, what I want to start at the show today, there's a lot to talk about on what we saw on Saturday between Juve and Milan. But what I wanted to ask you is this. Were you surprised that Bonucci actually celebrated his goal at his former stadium?
Honestly, David, no, I'm not surprised. I definitely didn't think before the game, okay, if Bonucci scores, he's going to celebrate. But considering the circumstances, they're down one. When Juventus scored, it already has this feeling of, all right, Juve is clearly the better team. This is not going to be the contest that we all thought it may be. But then, of all people, Bonucci scores, equalizes it, gives Milan hope, and he doesn't just score. He scores by Chiellini and Berzagli. I mean, you can't make that stuff up, David. That was unbelievable. So, you know, emotion, passion. We know Bonucci's got passion. We're all human, and you can't calculate passion. I know that very well as someone who does rants all too often, but I totally get why Bonucci celebrated. I'm not condoning it, but I'm also not condoning it. But if there is any justification of celebrating further than the fact that it was a intense moment, you got to remember, some Juventus fans really were quite cruel to Bonucci, taking it way out of bounds, going after his sick child. So don't think that that also wasn't in the back of his mind. But ultimately, I think it was about the moment, the magnitude of the situation. So no, I was not surprised Bonucci celebrated. What about you, David? Were you surprised?
Yeah, I'm with you on a lot of what you said. And, you know, I agree. And when I do get on one side, you know, he had a great career at Juve. It was interesting that Allegri in the pregame press conference said that, look, you know, Bonucci gave a lot to Juve, but then he also pointed out that Juve gave a ton to Bonucci. And there's a lot of truth to that. It was just you mentioned, a very emotional player, very emotional moment in the fashion that he scored with the other two members of the BBC on Buffon, scoring in time to end their streak of not giving up a goal that would have been their own record. So in the context, and even in the moment, you could tell that he really wasn't sure what to do with himself. I think he even had some doubt, but it was really a big moment for him. And, you know, last week I was reading a lot about Bonucci's personal life, how originally he thought he was going to move to Milan and then decided to keep his family in Turin. So he's been kind of commuting back and forth. I mean, the cities really aren't that far, and that, you know, he stays in a hotel by the central station in Milan and sometimes sleeps at Milanello after a night game. But, you know, a lot of his life is still in Turin. So to me, that was a very emotional moment. He was booed before the match from Juve fans. And just like I'm fine with him celebrating, I'm fine with Juve fans booing. So I found that very interesting. And one last nugget that made me crack me up is, like, you know, they asked Bonucci, you know, what did he miss about, you know, going back to Juve Stadium? And there was that video our friends at Italian Football TV showed it on their Instagram, that, you know, Bonucci almost teased that he was going to go to the wrong locker room and go back to Juve's. And, you know, one other thing that really stood out is, like, you know, when Juve, for home matches, when Bonucci was on Juve, he'd be the first one to run to the pitch where Juve would warm up. And if you've been at Juve Stadium, it's really funny because the first song that they always play is AC/DC's Thunderstruck. And that song, you know, if you've been at a Juve match when Bonucci was there, he would just run to the pitch on the first note. And it was really funny that on Bonucci's return to Juve Stadium was actually on the day of Angus Young's birthday. So that's AC/DC's lead guitarist who stars on that song. So I thought it was a very emotional moment. I think the fact that Juve won in the end, maybe Juve fans, you can be a little bit more forgiving for him celebrating, but I didn't have a problem with it. As you mentioned, you know, the context of what happened there is really important as well.
Yeah, and credit to Thousand Names, who predicted that Bonucci would score and celebrate. So well done to Thousand Names. All right, David, let's get to our next segment. It's not game picks just yet. It's winners and losers. We had all of Serie A play all day Saturday. So who are our winners and losers of episode 100 of the Calcio Land podcast?
Man, Saturday, what a day. I did a Calcio overdose, and then I finally had to make it up to my wife and take her out. So we went to go see Black Panther. We'll get into that in the next podcast. So on Saturday, there was a lot happening in Serie A. We're going to recap it in usual manner by going over our winners and losers. So the first one that I have, pretty interesting on the first match, I don't know if it was the first match, but we had Roma playing against Bologna. We had the debut for Bologna's third string keeper, Santurro. So he plays his first match in Serie A, had never even played in Serie B. The reason he was on the team is when Donadoni was coaching Parma, Santurro was the goalie on the Primavera team, and Bonucci made a mental note saying, hey, you know, I'd like to have that guy someday on my team. So he made his debut. I thought he handled himself pretty well. On the other side of the ledger for that match, we had Edin Dzeko come off the bench, score a big goal for Roma. Man, he's been amazing ever since he was linked to that move to Chelsea. Then we had on the Lazio match, we had Immobile scoring his 36th goal in all competitions. That in and of itself is incredibly significant when you consider where we are in the season. But he actually passed Chinaglia, who had the record at Lazio for most goals in a season with that goal. Interestingly, he did it the day before the anniversary of Chinaglia's death, which was 6 years ago. So a great season for Immobile, at least at the club level. We've trashed him a little bit on the Azzurri, but for Lazio, he's been incredible. Then we had Atalanta with another big win against Udinese. They've been really on a roll. They're solidifying their positions to get back to the Europa League, which would be really a significant achievement for them to do it 2 years in a row. Then we had Inter with a big win against Hellas Verona. So we had, to me, as Perisic goes, usually does Inter. So he had that assist on Icardi at the beginning of the match. We're also having a really good match by Brozovic, who's been fairly consistent for Inter. And the one thing about him is that he's consistently inconsistent, but recently he's doing pretty well. So Inter's a big winner because they're making a strong push for a Champions League spot. Then another big winner is Politano, who scored a goal for Sassuolo against Napoli. What a sliding doors moment. For those of you that had followed along with us in the January window, you're well aware that Politano was very close to joining Napoli and then didn't, and scored a huge goal in the race for the Scudetto. Juve, of course, big win against Bonucci. We had Cuadrado once again with a huge goal off the bench. Like, how many times does Cuadrado had these huge moments for Juve? Allegri once again nailed his subs. On one hand, though, if you wanted to be critical, you can say, well, maybe he's messing up his starting lineups, but that once his subs make such an impact. But there's something to be said about bringing in guys like Cuadrado and Douglas Costa when the wingbacks on the opposing team are struggling. Of course, Bonucci is a winner because he scored over his former members of the BBC. Interestingly, the last player to score against Juve in Serie A is another former Juve defender, Cáceres. So we have Bonucci and Cáceres, last guys to score against Juve. If Juve sells a defender this summer, they should be terrified if they're going to score against them. And last winner that we have is Torino, who they had really been struggling. They had lost four in a row. They score four goals on the road against Cagliari. Big win for them. They needed to get back on track. Ljajic had his first goal since September. On the other side of the ledger, for Milan, this was a big loss because both Inter and Lazio won. They're really behind the eight ball for the Champions League spot. I thought Donnarumma on the first goal on Dybala, granted it was a bounce in front of him, He's had better moments. I actually think Donnarumma this season probably took a slight step back than what we saw from him in previous years. Another big loser is Insigne. He missed some huge chances against Sassuolo. He's really struggled recently for Napoli. They really need him to elevate in this rush for the Scudetto. He really hasn't had some great moments for them. And that match against Sassuolo, that might be a really big strike against Napoli. And another loser that I have is Patrick Schick. Like, how many times do we hear Di Francesco in the press conferences say, yeah, we're going to give Schick a start. We're going to give him a chance. He's going to turn it around. He just hasn't. What a really sharp contrast from his other former teammate, Milan Skriniar, who went to Inter. That transfer looks fantastic. Schick, on the other hand, has been really kind of a disaster for Roma. So both of the best and worst move within Serie A and the transfer window came from Sampdoria. Skriniar, fantastic move. Schick, so far, not so much. Our last losers are Udinese, who have now lost six matches in a row after a strong start for Oddo. So, Alex, you mentioned it. Our friend Thousand Names riding high. He nailed the result. Bologna-Roma 1-1. He did guess that Bonucci was going to score. He ultimately didn't have the correct score for that match. So let's see how he does, though, this week. So we're going to do some picks with him on Thursday. The ones he sent me for today, there's going to be some matches in Serie A tomorrow and Wednesday to make up for all the matches that were canceled when Astori tragically passed away a while back. So he sent me three picks that I'll read out to you. We're going to do them as usual in Italian and English for all of our listeners. The first match, he has Atalanta beating Sampdoria 2-0, goals by Ilicic and Caldara. The comment is Gasperini is going to embarrass Giampaolo in the showdown between the two managers that are the most overrated by the press. I guess he's not a fan of Gasperini either. In Italian, Atalanta Samp 2-0, Ilicic Caldara. Gasperini umilia Giampaolo nella sfida tra allenatori sopravvalutati dalla stampa. Samp's been really struggling recently. Atlanta's on a roll, so I'm going to agree with him. I'm going to have it 1-0 with a goal by Papu Gomez. Next prediction, the big, big match, and this is on Wednesday, the derby between Milan and Inter. Thousand Names has Inter winning 1-0. Goal by Cardi. He says that Gattuso is going to get slapped around even by Spalletti now that his luck ran out. The mediocrity is returning to Milan, and that the soldier Bonucci is going to be humiliated once again in the derby. Now, Inter's riding high. Milan isn't doing too well recently. Usually in derbies, especially in the one in Milan, I tend to go with the underdog, but I do think this is going to be a draw. I have it as 1-1, a draw that really doesn't help Milan much. I think that would be a pretty good result for Inter. I'll read the prediction in Italian. Pronostico Milan-Inter 0-1, Icardi, Gattuso preso schiaffi pure da Spalletti, finito il culo, torna alla mediocrità, il soldato Bonucci umiliato ancora. I'm going to have it 1-1. I'll have Icardi and Suso scoring. Last match, and we got some good ones, and we'll go over some other ones as well in the race to avoid relegation, is Benevento playing at home against Hellas Verona. Actually, I think this was Thousand Names' opportunity to rile up Juve fans. Now that I'll read what he wrote, you'll see what I mean. So he has Benevento beating Hellas Verona 1-0 with a goal by Sagna. He says Benevento's manager De Zerbi is going to be charged up with this win as he gets ready to accomplish an amazing feat against Juve on Saturday. And he says that Hellas Verona manager Pecchia is another one who's essentially stealing his salary. So Hellas Verona have been really, really disappointing. Their performance against Inter, I mean, they really laid down in that match. Benevento's been a little bit more feisty. They actually put up a fight against Lazio as well. So I kind of agree with Thousand. I could see Benevento winning this one. And so those are his prediction. I'll read it in Italian as well. Benevento Hellas 1-0, Sagna, De Zerbi si carica in vista dell'impresa di sabato contro la Juve, Pecchia altro allenatore che ruba lo stipendio. So Fausen and I agree on Atalanta Samp. We agree Benevento is going to beat Hellas Verona. He has Inter winning the derby. I have it as a draw. A couple of other matches that I wanted to bring to your attention. Huge match in the race to avoid relegation. We have Chievo and Sassuolo playing in Verona. Huge game. I think if one of these teams win, they can kind of get some very good breathing room in towards the last three spots to avoid getting relegated. We have Torino playing at home against Crotone. We have Udinese, who I mentioned earlier, has lost six in a row. They faced Fiorentina. If you remember that, it was actually a story passed away right as he was getting ready for this match. So very emotional, I'm sure, for Fiorentina players. And the other match that we didn't mention coming up over the next 2 days is Genoa at home against Cagliari. So those are predictions. Thank you to Thousand Names. We're actually going to have him on the podcast. I was trying to get him on today for the 100th to read out his predictions, but we'll have him on very soon. So now let's get to my favorite part of the podcast. Let's get into the Twitter questions. As a reminder, you can send us in questions on Serie A, on transfers around the globe, pop culture, using the CalcioLand hashtag. So keep them coming. Which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, well, let's address the elephant in the room. After Saturday's draw against Sassuolo, is it game over for Napoli's Scudetto chances? And do you blame Sarri's lack of rotation and or the failure to make any signings in January?
So we got a lot of questions on this. I got a lot of questions on Napoli's mentality, but this one kind of sums up, you know, all the questions, and I'll give a little more extra thoughts to address everything that came in, not just what you read out, Alex. So I've been saying for a while, to me, I thought, you know, when I wrote that column on how we're going to remember Napoli as the Phoenix Suns with Steve Nash, I thought the Scudetto was already over there. I have to give credit to Napoli. They've been pretty feisty. Juve had that bad game against Spal. But for me, it was basically over already. I wouldn't be surprised if Juve just runs the table the rest of the league in Serie A. I mean, if you followed Allegri, you know that this is the time of year that his teams really, really peak. So I think there's a lot of takes on how Napoli choked and what a poor mentality they have. And I think there's definitely a little bit about that. But let's be honest, I just think Juve deserves a lot more credit than this. To me, I go back to the fact that Napoli won 10 in a row. They didn't open a lead in the standings because Juve matched them in every game. That's got to be really demoralizing. When I watch Napoli now, I don't see the fun, fluidity, the joy in the way that they play. I think Juve really zapped out their hope when they were just keeping up with them on that win streak. And look, as far as, like, you know, Sarri's lack of rotation, I've said many times, to me, tactically, Sarri is the best manager in Serie A. But that's just, that's probably the most important, but there's a lot of other components of the role, like managing your players for the whole season. You know, Allegri might be even too cautious to get to the point to have his team speaking, but Sarri doesn't do that at all. We've also seen his vulgar language. A lot of people have said that, you know, he complains too much, which, you know, gives his team in a lot of ways an excuse to lose. And I think those are his limitations. It's possible that he can improve with time, but I'm just not sure if he has, you know, the disposition to be at like a huge club or whatnot. I think Napoli deserves a lot of credit for an amazing season, but this Juve is just really hard to keep up with. You know, in years past, we saw Roma under two different managers break their point record in a season, both under Rudy Garcia and Luciano Spalletti, and they didn't win the title either of those years. They lost to Juve. So I definitely think there are reasons to criticize Napoli, especially their failures in the January transfer window. To me, that's a much bigger problem than the lack of rotation. But I think for all the takes on Napoli, we also need to take a step back and also congratulate Juve, because they really dominate Serie A in a way that, you know, you have to respect the way they really go about their business. They really have objectives throughout the season, and fans get frustrated that they start slow, but guess what? Here we are in April and they are in good shape in every competition.
I continue to love the Phoenix Suns Napoli parallel more and more. Just like Napoli, the Suns were by far the most aesthetically pleasing team, but once the season came to a close, they started to lose a little bit of their oomph. So I really like that parallel. And Juventus really is the San Antonio Spurs. So moving on, David, next Twitter question. Why did DiBiagio employ so many veterans rather than trying to integrate more young players during two meaningless friendlies?
So we talked about it a little bit in previous episodes. For me, it was pretty obvious that DiBiagio saw these two friendlies as his audition to try to get the job full time. I also wonder if Astori's death, you know, granted he wasn't a starter on the Azzurri, but he was a fixture with the Italian national team, not just at the senior level, but he was on the youth teams. He was really a big presence at Coverciano, where the Italian national team practices, if they really wanted to bring a little bit more continuity and veterans. The other thing is that DiBiagio's former team, so the under 21 with Italy, they have a full-time manager in Ivani, and maybe, they wanted to give the new manager some of the core under 21 players on his team. But long and short of it, I think DiBiagio saw these two friendlies as his opportunity to try to get the job full time. I'm not a huge fan of his. I hope that didn't really give momentum to his candidacy. And to be fair to DiBiagio, the other thing is the Italian national team has always historically been about seniority, not open to big, big changes. So hopefully whoever gets that job permanently will try to bring in more young players, but I wouldn't expect a huge revolution just because of the nature of the federation and how they operate.
Oh boy, I'm rolling my eyes reading this next Twitter question because I want this manager coming to Chelsea. But David, if Thomas Tuchel signs with PSG, does Antonio Conte become the favorite for the Italy job?
Yeah, so to be fair, on this podcast, for a while we've talked about Conte potentially going to PSG. There's been a lot of reports on that. On Di Marzio's side, there was earlier in the year, L'Equipe. So there was a lot of momentum for that. But now it seems like Tuchel has kind of taken the lead for that job. Interestingly, Bayern Munich's CEO Rummenigge was asked about Tuchel recently, and he said, look, he already accepted another job. He told us that, you know, sounds like it's probably PSG. So that would really leave Conte in an interesting position. You know, before that match against Spurs, I was almost, when I read that Tuchel news, I was like, oh, I wonder if Conte can maybe finagle his way back to Chelsea. But seeing the last few matches, that does not seem to be the case. So it's not out of the question that the Italy job becomes attractive to him again. Like, I have to say, when he originally got the job, I never in a million years thought that he would, because that the same federation that had suspended him for the match-fixing stuff was trying to hire him. I saw him more as a club coach, especially at a young age. So you really never know. Conte might actually feel that that's really his best chance. He likes jobs where he goes in with low expectations that could kind of do a rebuild, and certainly the Italian national team could use that. So I think that gives him a little bit of momentum there. I don't see a job in Serie A that makes a lot of sense for him. I think Gattuso has done enough to keep the Milan job. I'm not sure, unless he got some big assurances on the transfer market, that that job would be attractive to Conte. So yeah, long and short of it, I do think if Tuchel goes to PSG, it does bring a little bit more momentum to Conte with the Italy job.
I'm going to sneak this in here since it's the 100th episode. Yeah, Conte, thank you for last year. I truly mean that. He was phenomenal last year, but I am officially hashtag Conte out. All right, next Twitter question.
I think Conte himself is part of the hashtag.
I think he made that hashtag, actually. All right, David, next Twitter question. What's the reason for Inter's turnaround in the second half of the season?
So the person that sent in this question pointed out to Perisic and Brozovic playing well, and I think that has a lot to do with it. Brozovic has been a massive improvement over what we got from Vecino and Borja Valero. I think Rafinha, too, has brought, technically some good performances, but also, you know, kind of a Milan, Inter needed a little bit of a push, a little bit of a momentum shift. Our friend Andrew Barker put it really well, that in Rafinha's first few matches, he was kind of like someone who starts a new job at a company where a lot of the workforce is pretty disenchanted and trying to rile people up. So I think that has helped as well. But I think the defense has been a lot better for a while. Inter hasn't conceded many goals in the past few weeks, that has gone a long way towards solidifying them. So Inter deserves a lot of credit. For a while, they really looked like they were crashing out of a Champions League spot. They've really solidified that. Now they might even be challenging Roma for that third place. Not that it makes much of a difference between third and fourth. You go straight to the group stage. But if Inter can finish third after all the turmoil, that wouldn't be such a bad way to end the season.
All right, next Twitter question. What does Juve's interest in Anthony Martial mean for the club's current strikers?
So it's a good question. So we haven't reported anything on this on Di Marzio's site, and I try not to speak too much about the other reports. And look, you know, obviously Martial is a great talent. I think teams could see a great opportunity with him struggling to get consistent playing time at Manchester United. He's, of course, still really young. Like, he could be a huge steal for the right team, but I'm not so sure that right team is Juve, because I have to say one player that really impressed me this season, that really proved me wrong, is Bernardeschi. First of all, he really proved me wrong because I never thought in a million years Fiorentina would sell their best player to Juve, and that happened. I never was a huge fan of his as a player, but boy, was he impressive at Juve. He's back healthy now. He's been out for a while. He's back training with the team. So I think rather than focusing on Martial or another striker like that, I think now it's time for Juve to give Bernardeschi an opportunity to start regularly, because I think he's ready.
All right, next question. What options do Juve have to improve the midfield if Milinkovic-Savic isn't a realistic possibility?
So great question. And, you know, and we'll get into it too with the next question as well. When I look at Juve's squad, there's really not that many opportunities for improvement. There's obviously the midfield could use help. We get a lot of questions on Khedira. Why does Juve keep playing him? Granted, he had that big moment against Milan, but Juve could really improve in the midfield. I like Pjanic this season. I think has been probably his most consistent season, but he does disappear in some big matches in the Champions League. So I think Juve really needs to bolster the midfield. We've talked a lot about Milinkovic-Savic on our podcast. I think Juve is going to be priced out for him. Even if they were to sell Dybala, it'd be really close, really tough to come up with an offer to match the market that Milinkovic-Savic is going to have. And that's putting even aside the very difficult relationship Juve has with Lazio. So let's say Milinkovic-Savic isn't realistic. Of course, there's Emre Can. We're waiting to see if Juve can actually close that deal. The more time passes, the more there's a chance that it becomes into a Witzel situation where you think it's just a matter of time that he signs with Juve. In addition to Emre Can, some other midfielders that Juve has been linked with, there's Brian Cristante on Atalanta. I have some reservations on him because I think he's the typical player that looks great at Atalanta playing for a manager like Gasperini. I'm not sure if he could do it at a big club. And then there are two midfielders that have ties to Roma, Lorenzo Pellegrini, currently at Roma with an exit clause, fairly reasonable, $25 million. Roma's trying to extend him. It would be interesting to see if Pellegrini would want to play for any other Serie A team. He is from Rome, grew up as a Romanista. And the other midfielder that's been linked to Juve that I know of is former Roma midfielder Paredes, who's now at Zenit. Left Roma last summer. He's a player that Juve's director Paratici has always liked. I'm not a huge fan of him. To me, he is the definition of a Vine player. People that see him in Vines think he's amazing. You're watching a game, maybe not so much. But hey, Paratici is a much better scout than I'll ever be. So those are the names that we have so far. I have a feeling this list is going to grow as we get closer to the summer.
All right, staying on the old lady, who should Juve buy to bolster the right-back position with Lichtsteiner's contract expiring and DeCilio's slow improvement this season?
So I have to tell you, in general, wing-backs, they're so scarce on the market. There's just not that many good ones, both right and left-back. So even when I hear all the criticism on Marcos Alonso at Chelsea, I'm always like, well, not going to be that easy to get a better one, because the clubs that have a better left backs than that, they really don't want to give them up. And right back, kind of in the same position, you look at Serie A as a whole, there's not that many great right backs. Like, one name that I've heard linked to Juve is Cancelo, who's on loan at Inter, and boy, would that be a slap to Inter if Juve can sign him. But again, a tough position to fill. Then there's the one on Arsenal. What's his name? Bellerin? Is that his name,
yep,
Alex?
He's
been linked to Juve. Really, really expensive. Not sure they can get that done. I think Juve's best is to really hope that De Sciglio develops. Also, they have Spinazzola coming back from Atalanta. He can play on both sides. Granted, he's been known more on the left. So say Juve hangs on to Alessandro, maybe they could play Spinazzola on right wing back. But in general, I would always caution people, it's very hard to get good wing backs.
All right, here's an interesting question. How good could Del Piero have been without the knee injury?
It's a great question. And, you know, I've been following Serie A since the mid-80s. I grew up in Padova. I saw Del Piero play before, but he played there before he went to Juve. And when I think of, you know, who's the best Italian striker that I saw, and let's say more of striker, like great number 10, who's the best that I saw in my lifetime? And it's definitely Robbie Baggio, better than Totti, better than Del Piero. But I do wonder, had Del Piero not suffered that injury in 98, and that was in Udine, I'll never forget that match. I think Del Piero could have reached Baggio's level. He might have even surpassed him. I was watching like some videos of Del Piero in 96 or so. Man, what a force of nature. Like, had much more dynamic than he was after the knee injury. So when people ask me, you know, who's better between Del Piero and Totti, my diplomatic answer, and it's not really just diplomatic, like, I really believe that, I say prior to the knee injury, I'll take Del Piero. After, I'll take Totti. I'll take Baggio over both of them. But I do think Del Piero could have reached Baggio's level. The other reason, too, is, you know, he was at a big club for a while. He had the personality, Del Piero, to stay at a big club for a while. So without the knee injury, he's going to go down as an all-time great regardless, but he really could have gone to a whole other level without that injury, in my opinion.
All right, interesting. Last Twitter question. What are the odds Super Mario Balotelli joins Roma?
So last week, Balotelli, he's been given a lot of interviews, but last week he was asked a lot about Serie A teams. You know, he talked about one time he had an offer from Juve and decided not to go. He was asked about potentially returning to Inter. He said he would be happy to go back. I think, you know, if he could, he'd run back to Milan. I think that's the team he'd like to be on the most. Also, when he was asked about Roma, he really praised the club and, you know, the management. So Monchi, Palotta, that whole group. I actually think he'd make a lot of sense for Roma for a lot of reasons, even just financial. I think Zeko's been great. They can still cash in on him, get a good return, and sign Balotelli on a free transfer in the summer. That might actually be an exciting move. I could really see now the more mature Balotelli really becoming a huge hit in the city of Rome. I actually would really like to see it. The other thing too, I was trying to think, you know, does Mino Raiola, his agent, have any connection to Roma? He does, in the sense that a few years ago he negotiated the transfer that brought them Manolas from his Greek club. So there's a connection there. Granted, that was prior to Monchi. So let's see if that happens. But that would be a fantastic move there. So as usual, a big thank you to everyone that sends in the questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. So right now we want to take a step back, reflect. Right now we're recording officially our 100th episode. Huge, huge milestone in the sense that, you know, I'll let you guys debate the quality of the shows. I'd like to think that at least on a handful of these 100 episodes, some of them were pretty good. But I'll have to tell you, just showing up and doing these, I'm very proud of what Alex and I did. We've done these in a year. I always tell people, you know, just do the work. And a lot of people always ask me, you know, what do I need to do to break in this industry? And I was like, just show that you're reliable as a way to start. And one thing no one's going to be able to take away from us is the fact that we've done 100 episodes in a year. So great job to you, Alex. And one thing, you know, I just want to go back to how this podcast all started. You know, I've been going on podcasts, radio shows for years. I've always kind of thought there needed to be, you know, a podcast focused on Serie A done a certain way. I also knew, you know, a lot of great journalists. I knew a lot of the people that followed my work, you know, were aspiring writers. I got a ton of questions on writing. So I always thought, you know, how can I combine all these things? I know a lot of journalists. I'd like to think I know a lot about Serie A. I certainly have a lot of passion on for the league. So I wanted to come up with like a show that combined all these things. And I have done a few shows with Alex on a show that he did on the local sports radio here in Boston. And I made a mental note, this kid's really, really sharp. We met for dinners. It was a little bit over a year ago to talk about the show. I know when I met with you, I didn't have too many specific things. I had a guest list in my mind, and I knew that Matteo Bonetti had to be the first guest because I knew his story really well, and it would center our podcast well. So I'm very proud of what we've accomplished. I'm really proud. I mean, I didn't discover you, Alex, because you were doing stuff before you and I started working together, but you've done great work. It's hard to keep up with me content-wise. You've done it. So really, really great work. So enough from me, Alex. Tell me, what was your favorite episodes out of these first 100 and why? And maybe just give me like a few thoughts on what we've done in the past year.
Yeah. So let me start with the episode, my favorite episode. That was not easy. As you said, we've had 100 episodes, a huge assortment of guests, big variety from the places they've worked, the professions they work in. But I have to go with someone that we've had on three times, and it was the first time we had him on, and that is Dre Cordero. I feel like you know exactly where I'm going with this, David. The cognitive bias talk from Dre Cordero was so damn interesting. I have listened to his answer on that maybe 10 times, and I learned something new each time. But it's so true what he says about cognitive bias and how it's really an interesting thing to study in sports. I think if anybody is on Twitter, you see it at a premium. He talked at length about how two fans of different teams can watch the same game and come away with completely different takes on the game. It could be on the game. It could be on a player, a coach, a referee decision. But it's so, so true. And for anybody that's on Twitter, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It goes deeper than that. It's also, he talked about announcer bias, which I think is so true. He talks about how if you hear an announcer insult your favorite player, you remember that for a long time. But if they say the good things, you kind of just bypass that. And boy, is that right. My favorite player is Eden Hazard. Millions of good things are said about him. I hardly ever remember them, David. But the moment an announcer opens up his mouth and says something negative, I want to tweet at that announcer. I want to immediately scream at the TV. So it's all so, so true. And then, you know, I wanted to take it a step further after I've listened to that interview like 10 times. David, I'm sure you've seen this on Twitter. There's always this poll. It'll start with some big fan of a club saying, let's end the debate. And they say, who's better? And this is just an example. Mohamed Salah or Eden Hazard, and they'll give you two ways of voting. You either like for Eden Hazard or you retweet for Mohamed Salah, and that must be the most uneven debate I've ever heard of, because if you know anything about Twitter, we're way more likely to like than we are to retweet. So every debate where you have to pick one player by liking or retweeting is the most insanely unbalanced, skewed debate ever. So I urge people, it's episode 21 of the Calcio Land podcast, Dre Cordero, listen to his answer. It's towards the end. It'll change maybe the way you watch the next game, think about the next game. So real props to Dre Cordero on that one. He brings such energy. I mean, it's no slight on any of the guests we've had. They've all been phenomenal. But that one, if I had to pick one, really sticks with me. So David, I'm talking about what I learned or what I liked in that episode. Part of what I've loved on this show, and we talked about it in the preview episode, is I obviously came from a much different background than you. I'm way more new into this sport. You mentioned, yeah, I was doing a podcast for a local radio station here, but we barely scratched the surface of European soccer. We talked about MLS, which I don't really even know a lot about. So I have learned so much on this podcast. My favorite segment, and I think it's yours, is the Twitter questions. So I also could have easily just said my favorite episode is any episode where we answer Twitter questions, but you said it, the first episode. I kind of served as a stand-in for the audience, and The audience sends in the questions, but almost 90% of the questions that are sent in, I have thought about, or once I read them, I'm also like, oh yeah, I love that question. And I learn so much every episode. I usually will listen to our episodes when I walk my dog, and I do listen to your answers here on the podcast live, but I really listen to them just like our audience when I'm back home. And I learn so much, and I know the audience does. So let me flip it to you, David. Not only what is your favorite episode, but I also want to ask you, what have you learned? Because I'm in a different perspective. I'm really learning about the sport, but what have you learned now that you've done 100 episodes?
Wow, a lot of great stuff there. And yeah, the Dre Cordero one, that was really memorable. And what I liked about it is was like, I told myself, and I think you and I said it after, you don't really hear that type of stuff on a lot of other podcasts. And that was really awesome. And Dre and I have a lot of, not a lot, but once in a while, we'll exchange ideas offline. And we're also considering doing a podcast where we'll talk a little bit about football, but really get into more like philosophy and sociology. I mean, the guy has really got a lot to bring to the table. So aside from that, you know, one thing that I learned, I remember in one of our first episodes, we had Frank Iasola, who's the writer for the Daily News, loves soccer. Those of you in the U.S., you know him from around the horn. Like, he's a very famous journalist, maybe not for soccer. And one thing that he said as advice, he goes, if you want to be in journalism, just don't be afraid to just keep going back to your sources, going back to people and ask them over and over again. And that's one thing that I've learned with like booking guests and trying to get people on. Like, I don't give up easily after I heard that call with Frank, because to be honest, before I would just try one or two times and I'd be like, all right, that's it. But some of the guests that we really were excited to have on, and look, you know, we've had a lot of great guests, so I'm not really singling them out, but you know, it was a long time in the making getting Alexi Lalas on. Like, I had tried a few times and it took one of our listeners to tweet it to make it happen. Rory Smith from the New York Times, that was a long time in the making to get him on. So, you know, that's one thing that I've learned is like persistence is really important. And the other thing too is like, you know, it goes back to getting your reps in. To a lot of the people that we asked, you know, when they were coming on the podcast, what advice do they have? And is, you know, just do the work and do a lot of it. And I think that's really, really good advice. I mean, I listened to some of our first few podcasts. I'm just so much more comfortable doing it. So I think getting your reps in is so, so key. You know, the other thing that I learned is I really try to stick to what I know. You know, it's a very limited, the subjects that I'm comfortable talking about. So I'm also not afraid to say if I don't know something. Some people criticize me for that, but that's perfectly fine. You know, if you show me a know-it-all, and I'll probably show you a fraud. So that's the other thing that I've learned and that's worked well for me. So I'm really excited. These first 100 episodes have been really great. I wanted today to just be you and I, Alex, because you've been really the core of the team with me. So I want to take this opportunity, like you said, to thank all of our listeners. We've come a long way in this year of episodes. We've gotten the partnership with the All Sports Talk Network. We're really expanding. You know, I have one more ask for our listeners. We're really on the cusp of getting to where we need to be with advertisers and all. We just need a little bit extra push. So if you enjoy what we do, please keep leaving those reviews and promoting what we do, because ultimately we stand on your shoulders and we really want to thank you for that.